Welcome to the Black Sparrow Media Internet Broadcast Network.
You are listening to Linux in the Ham Shack. LHS is a podcast about Linux, open source, and amateur radio, for everyone. Now here are your hosts, Cheryl, W5MOO, Russ, K5TUX, and Bill, NE4RD.
Well, hello everybody and welcome. You have tuned in to episode number 601 of Linux in the Ham Shack, the most terrific amateur radio podcast on the internet. And tonight you have joined us for a deep dive episode, so welcome in. We have a what I hope is not too dry a topic for tonight, but before we get into that topic, we'll go ahead and introduce ourselves for the on assignment. Cheryl, W5MOO. I'm Russ, K5TUX.
And I'm Bill, NE4RD.
All right, so here we are again, and this is a topic that is going to be talked about tonight because it has been top of mind for me for the last several weeks because it's something that I've been trying to do and finally got it done.
Yay!
And I think this might tie into some relevance with topics we've touched on recently, because we have mentioned things like WaveLog, which is a hosted solution for logging for ham radio. And if you want to keep those sites secure, you have to have certificates. And if you want those certificates to have the little green check mark or whatever, if you want them to come back as valid in your browser so you can avoid those annoying "this site is insecure" pop-ups, this might be of interest to you, and of course it's of interest to me in a lot of ways because I maintain a lot of sites that have certificates and use encryption, and so I needed some way to automate the process of renewing those certificates without having to go to sites like SSLs.com and, you know, updating every year, and of course for those you have to pay for them, but there's a service known as Let's Encrypt, which I'm sure we're all familiar with at this point, that allows you to get free certificates, and it can manage them for you, and it can automate the process to a certain degree. But there's another way to authenticate that process in CertBot other than using like the .well-known structure in websites and things like that. There's a couple of problems with that, mostly related to the fact that you have to keep port 80 open because there's no authentication with that, and if you're doing HTTP authentication for your certificates, port 80 has to be open. So if you want to limit that, you can't do it over an SSL connected website. So that's kind of an issue. Then of course you have to maintain those and make sure they're always up to date and everything. And if you do get it configured properly, then CertBot will, you know, run periodically and it will update those certificates for you. But as it turns out, there's kind of an easier way, and that is by using DNS authentication, and specifically via the RFC 2136 mechanism, which has nothing to do with certificates. It's entirely about DNS. But what it is a dynamic update protocol for DNS. It's RFC, obviously. I'm using Bind9 as my daemon, which supports RFC 2136, and there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of other implementations, including cloud services and so on, that also support RFC 2136 for doing authentication so you can automate the process of getting your certificates. This is particularly useful if, like for me, I have lots of certificates. I have many domains, and Let's Encrypt allows you to create wildcard certificates for those domains, which is super handy because for the most part, you can just use one certificate for any host or subdomain on those domains. It can also do things like put multiple domains into a single certificate, and they will authenticate properly in your browser. However, in my case, that just was crazy. It was too hard to keep track of. It's easier for me just to have one domain, one wildcard domain, and deal with it that way. But this is also the RFC that is used for dynamic DNS host updates. So if your client gets a DHCP address, you can have that client update the DNS server to indicate its new IP and create a hostname entry, and that's all done dynamically. So the same mechanism can be used to get certificates from Let's Encrypt in an automated way. So let's talk a little bit about RFC 2136. It defines the domain name system dynamic update protocol, which allows authorized clients to remotely update DNS records on a managed server. Protocol is a standardized method for DDNS, enabling things like automatic updates when a client's IP address changes. Many applications such as Bind and Windows Server DNS support RFC 2136, and it's frequently used for integrations with systems like DHCP or to automate services like TLS certificate validation with DNS challenges. Huh, that sounds like what we're about to talk about. So there's a couple of pieces to this puzzle. The two important pieces are certbot, which is a Python script that manages certificates and uses ACME, A-C-M-E, which I guess that's a protocol. I'm going to have to look that up real quick. Certificate. Love how we're doing this live. So, automatic certificate management environment. And it is a protocol. And certbot, well, not certbot, Let's Encrypt employs that protocol. And it allows for a method for authenticating your certificate requests. Now, certbot is that Python-based script, which allows you to interact with Let's Encrypt ACME protocol and generate certificates. And this is really handy because, as previously stated, those are free. And this might be of more interest in the future because right now the current expiry on these Let's Encrypt certificates is 90 days, but there is talk about shortening that to 47 days, which means that you will have to find some way to manage these. Otherwise, you're going to have to be manually updating your certificates every 45 days or so. And right now, for me, if it's under a year, it's already problematic. So getting it down to under 2 months would be nightmarish. So I needed to figure out a way to do this, and I have since done it. So certbot is a script. You just run it with certbot. It gives you help. You can, it's pretty straightforward. You request certificates using it. It handles the protocol. You can do it. You can set up each of your domains to use HTTP authentication or DNS authentication. We're going to talk about the DNS part because that's the important part. So you will have to have one important thing for this to work, and that is the ability to manipulate a DNS server. Now, that can be your own DNS server that you manage. That's the easiest way, and that's the way I do it. But you can also have hosted DNS. A lot of places that host DNS, like, you know, Cloudflare and Namecheap and DigitalOcean and all that, all of them allow you to manage your own DNS, and they have ways of implementing RFC 2136 as well. But as previously stated, I'm going to talk about the bind daemon, Bind9 in this case, which is the ISC daemon that provides named services for Linux. And you only have to configure a couple of things to get certbot to be able to interact and dynamically update your DNS. When you set up zone files in Bind9, there's some configuration, and I'm going to connect to my server just so I don't get any of this wrong. My DNS server, by the way. And if I could type not misspell things, that would be great. All right. So I'm in my DNS server, and in etc bind is where the configurations live. You have a namedy.conf.local file where you have local configuration. And what you have to do is in your zone configurations, you have to put in a configuration directive called check-names ignore. This makes it so that you can add hostname entries that start with an underscore, which is what the RFC 2136 implementation of certbot does. It creates a text record with underscore acme-challenge and prepends that to the hostname or the domain name that it's trying to authenticate. That way, it knows that it's querying your server, the server that's authoritative for the domain, and that that record exists. Now, for that record to exist, you have to be able to dynamically create it. And that's the whole point behind all of this. So once you put that configuration in, you also have to put in an allow update block. And in that block, you type a key and the name of a key. And that key lives in that same directory at cbind. And you create that key using a utility called tsig-keygen. Now, the keysig or tsig-keygen defaults to the SHA or SHA-256 encryption. And that's perfectly valid for this. So you create the key using tsig-keygen. It creates a key file. And I called mine certbot.key because that's what I'm using it for certbot to update DNS. And then what you have to do is in your named.conf. Now, this is going to be different for different versions of DNS implementations, obviously. But in your named.conf.local, named.conf.options, is there's an include statement you put in there, and the include is to include etsy bind certbot.key, or whatever you've decided to call it. That way, bind knows what the key is, and that it's a valid key. And you've already defined in your named.conf.local that the zones are able to use that key for dynamic updates, and you'll have to include that in any zone definition that you want certbot to be able to dynamically update. You restart the server, you should be good to go. And then what you have to do is whatever, I recommend having all of your certificates managed by one instance of certbot. You certainly don't have to do that. You could have certbot running on every machine that has a web server on it, and it could do just the certificates for whatever sites are there. But what I found useful was to just have one machine do all the certificate updates, fetches, and so on. And those are stored when you're using certbot in a directory called /etc/letsencrypt. And the current certificates are under the subdirectory live. And so what I did is I copied all of the data from /etc/letsencrypt/live into another directory, in my case, /opt/certificates. So that way I have a copy of the repo. You can set the permissions the way you want to. And then what I did is I made that opt certificates directory into a Git repo. And I pushed that Git repo into my own private Git server so that it has a current copy of all the certificates that certbot has generated. And then I implemented a cron script, which updates that every week. So every week that Git gets updated, all the new certificates are checked, and if they're needing to be renewed, they'll be automatically renewed using RFC 2136. And then the repo gets automatically committed with the new update and then pushed up. So that way, any server that needs a certificate, all I have to do is install Git on, pull the repo, and then I have access to all the current certificates. To get to a little more about what I do with that in a minute, we need to go back a little bit and talk about certbot itself. So in order to implement this, you have to install a couple of packages. You have to install certbot, of course, and then you have to install a package called python3-certbot-dns-rfc2136. Pretty much straightforward. And that allows certbot to have access to doing authentication using RFC 2136. So there's one important file that's a configuration file for the protocol that you have to put in /etc/letsencrypt. Technically, you don't have to put it there, but that's a good place to put it. And I called mine rfc2136.ini. And in there are a few parameters. They all start with DNS underscore RFC 2136, followed by another underscore, and then the parameter. The first parameter is server, and that, of course, is the DNS server that you're going to be updating. The second parameter is port, and that's generally going to be 53, unless you're doing something funky, because that's the DNS port. Underscore name will be the name of the certificate that you defined on the DNS server, while the key itself is in a file called something. The key itself also has a name. I happen to name mine the same as the file, certbot, but of course it's arbitrary. That tsig command, the tsig keygen, generated a key. So there's a parameter called secret, and that contains the key, and of course it has to match. And then the algorithm, hmac-sha-256, which also has to match so that certbot can decode the key. So once you've done that, you can invoke certbot with RFC 2136. And I have a script to do that because the syntax is kind of like unwieldy. But you have to give it some parameters. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to include my scripts in the show notes so you can see how I've done it and see what parameters need to be passed to certbot to enable RFC 2136 authentication. But what eventually happens is you use certbot and you specify a domain with slash or with dash D. And if you want a wildcard, what you do is you do dash D name of the domain and then dash D again with star dot domain. And that will generate a wildcard. You specify your RFC 2136.ini file for configuration, and then you let it do its work. It will generate the ACME-challenge text record. It will push that up using dynamic DNS. Then it will wait a little while for your DNS server to update and for those updates to propagate. The default on that is 60 seconds. Then certbot will check to see if the DNS server returns that text field. And if it does, then ACME knows that that's authenticated. It will grant the certificate and then pull it down. And you'll have your certificate in Etsy Let's Encrypt Live. And of course, then I use my scripts to move it to the Git repo, push it up, and all is good. This, of course, is all handled by either a systemd timer or cron. So you can run them periodically and have all of this stuff automated. So, and once you have defined a certificate and pulled one down using RFC 2136, then that configuration is saved. And every time you run a certbot renew, it will automatically go check them. So you just put certbot renew into a cron job or a systemd timer, and you'll always have current certificates. And this will... It won't matter if it's 90 days, 47 days, or 6 days, as long as you run it often enough. So that's a lot of information. Did you hear anything there that sounded weird or any questions so far before I move on?
No. I think you're explaining it perfectly. I guess this would be really useful for people that do their own hosting and stuff like that. Because I was looking, there's a bunch of other DNS plugins for certbot as well for all the other services you kind of mentioned earlier, like, you know, Google, Linode, Cloudflare, DigitalOcean, and everything else.
Yep, because a lot of them have their own methods for doing dynamic DNS updates. Some of them actually implement RFC 2136, but they do it in their own way. So yeah, there are lots of shims depending on, you know, what kind of system you're using for DNS. But the Bind9 service just uses straight up RFC 2136. So that's, you know, the implementation I used. But yeah, you can use anything. And I think you'll find that instead of having to have these, you know, generated .well-known files and stuff for authentication that the HTTP server has to fetch, or, you know, spinning up temporary web servers for the ACME protocol to check and things like that, that can be really cumbersome, especially if you're trying to do the check on a system that already is running, like Apache or Nginx or something like that. You can get port conflicts. So you can actually specify ports and stuff like that, but you cannot use a secure protocol for ACME. It has to be, you know, just HTTP. So for my use, and I think for ease of configuration, using DNS authentication is, I don't know, I consider it better. I tried doing it the other way, but it's hard to manage, and I had to set up a bunch of like start and stop hooks so I could like stop the Apache server that was running, spin up a temporary one, get the certificate, move everything around, then restart the service. And it was kind of a pain in the butt, but DNS seems to work a lot better. And if you have total control, like I do, of your DNS servers, it makes it super simple. Otherwise you have to, use the methods that your DNS host uses. But Certbot, since it's a Python script and open source and everything, lots of plugins have been written for it. So before I move on, anything else?
Not that I can think of.
All right. So once you've generated a bunch of certificates, the ones that you can get for your domain, the domains that you control, you can store those however you like. I found it convenient to just basically clone Etsy Let's Encrypt into a separate directory that I could create a Git repo out of. That way everything's versioned, everything's automatically updated, and I can keep it centralized in one private Git repo that I can just pull down anywhere. So at that point, what I would do is, depending on what the use case is, I would just create symlinks to the repo, because that way, whenever the repo updates via cron, you'll always have the new certificates handy, and then all you have to do is restart the service, and the certificate will be updated. Now, obviously, the certificate will be updated before that, but you do have to, in the case of things like Nginx and Apache and stuff like that, you need to restart or reload the service so that it recognizes there's a new certificate. And, of course, whatever applications you're using that require a certificate, there could be a different use case. But I have found that in 95% of the cases where I'm doing this, that simply linking to the repo, I have it structured the same way as Let's Encrypt. So it'd be like /opt/certificates/domain/ and then the files. They're all in PEM encoding. And that's readable by almost anything. I also have a separate script, because I do have a couple of services that don't really like certificate and key file in PEM encoded format. They prefer .p12 or PKCS12 format. So my script that does the copy of Let's Encrypt over to the Git repo also, for every domain, takes the PEM files, the certificate, the chain, and the key, and generates a PKCS12 key store for every domain. So for any application or whatever that prefers a .p12, I have one, and it's just automatically generated from the certain key. That's particularly handy. I use these applications for media management. They're called the ARRs, A-R-R, things like LiDAR, sonar, radar, so on. And all of those like their keys, their SSL certificates in .p12 format. So that way I always have those handy. So literally those are symlinked as well, wherever they need to be. And then once a week, those services are restarted. And if there's a new certificate, it will be updated. So that works really well for me. And I've also automated all the pulling of the repo and the updates. I have one sort of monolithic script that has like all of the possible use cases. Like, am I using Radar or Apache or Audio Bookshelf? Or whatever, like any service that requires a certificate, it's in that script. And then I just have to, whatever server I'm on, whatever services it's actually providing, I just uncomment those. And then at 3 o'clock in the morning, I update the repo. And at 5 o'clock in the morning, I restart the necessary services. And then everything is totally automatic at that point. So that's for most use cases, a symlink to either a cert and private key file or to a P12 file will do the trick, and restarting the services will make everything update automatically. I did have a couple of special cases for me. The first one is VMware ESXi server. I have a bunch of virtual host hypervisors, ESXi. Now, managing certificates on there is actually pretty easy. It's a matter of putting the certificate.pem and the privkey.pem onto the ESXi host. I do this via SSH, and then I have a really basic script on the SSH host that pushes those to where they need to be, which happens to be /etc/vmware/ssl/rui.cert and rui.pem. And once those are pushed there, you restart the service, /etc/etd/hostd/restart, and your ESXi's management interface has a new certificate. So that's all managed with scripting for me as well. Super simple. The thing that makes all of this work, by the way, is SSH private key authentication on your Linux boxes. So instead of having to log in with a password for these scripts to run or to copy files back and forth or whatever, it's all done with known keys, with authorized keys. I do that. I have those set up, you know, across my entire server farm and network, so that the keys are already pre-populated. Every machine can access every other machine without a password. It's all using key authentication, and that simplifies all of this, because if you had passwords you had to enter, it would all be manual again, and that's kind of defeating the purpose. So finally, for me, the last part was I have a couple of servers that I stopped using ESXi on it and started using Proxmox Virtual Environment as a open source replacement for ESXi because of some craziness with Broadcom. And they have in Proxmox built in the ability to do ACME linking with Let's Encrypt and automatic updating, but you have to tell it the mechanism by which you want to do the authentication. So there's a couple of steps. You have to go into your data center. You have to tell it that you want to use ACME, and you have to set up ACME. There's kind of some steps to this. I'll put that in the show notes as well. It's not that difficult, but basically you have to create an ACME account that registers your entity, I guess, you as an entity with Let's Encrypt, so that it knows that you're going to be requesting certificates. You set that up, and then you set up the mechanism by which you're going to create those certificates. And in the dropdown for Proxmox, it's called NS Update, but in the dropdown it says NS Update RFC 2136. So you know exactly that you're doing the thing you need to. And then what you have to do is you have to copy your TSIG key, in my case it's the certbot one, onto the Proxmox server in a place where it can be read. I use user local share. And then that's one of the configuration parameters you have to give it. You have to tell it the certificate. Let me get the exact things that you're supposed to set here. This, of course, will be in the show notes, but I want to get it right here in case anybody doesn't want to read the show notes, which, you know, RTFM, that's the whole point. So,
yeah. Who reads the manuals? Come on.
Exactly. Yeah, we have some feedback about that. Accounts, yeah, so under accounts, you create an account, and that just registers you with Let's Encrypt. And then the challenge plugins, you select NS Update, which of course is already identified as RFC 2136. And in there, you just have to specify where the key is, user local share NS Update.key. In my case, you could call it certbot.key or whatever, it doesn't make any difference. The validation delay, I left at 60 because that's a good amount of time to make sure that your DNS updates have propagated. You have to tell it the server, same as with the RFC2136.ini file, and you have to give it the zone, and that's going to be the domain for which you're requesting a Proxmox certificate. And then you go to the Proxmox host itself, and under system, there is a tab called certificates. And in there, you'll see a place for ACME, which you've already predefined. And in there, you configure your challenge type, which you're going to be using DNS because it's RFC 2136, the plugin, which you've already defined as NS Update, and the domain that you're requesting a certificate for, which will be the host name of the Proxmox VME server that you're using. And then you select that you're using the account that you predefined before. And then you click on order certificates. And if you've done all of that correctly, you'll get a new certificate. Your UI's interface will restart and you'll have that brand new certificate. And from that point on, Proxmox manages it and does the updates regularly all on its own, and you'll never have to do it again, and you'll never have an expired certificate. And ultimately, all of these steps that we've gone through from the very beginning of, you know, defining RFC 2136 down through all of the different servers that I use, the DNS server that I use, the ones that are available to you, and the systems that I use, unless I've broken something, and of course, I only got this done in the last couple of days, so it'll be a week or two before I know if anything is really broken. But at this point, I'm under the impression that all of my certificate management is completely automated, and I should never have to deal with certificates again. Now, someday we'll revisit this, and I will tell you if I was right.
But yeah. The next time we get an email, hey, I can't get the podcast.
Exactly. Yeah, because LHSpodcast.info is definitely one of the ones that's being managed. And so far, so good. So I haven't had anything break. I'm pretty sure I'm restarting all of the services that I need to restart. So now it's just a waiting game to see what breaks and then go digging around to find out what broke it. But yeah, so there's a few moving parts. All of the scripting that I've done, I don't think any of the scripts are more than like 30 lines. And only that one is the big monolithic script that I can put on any server and just uncomment the things that need to be restarted. As far as like updating the repo and stuff like that, these are all like 5 and 6 line scripts. It's all really simple and they're really easy to parse. And I'm going to publish all that stuff. Maybe I'll publish all that stuff in a Git repo because, you know, I've been doing that lately. So
yeah, fancy.
Yeah. So I keep it all in Git anyway. So there's no reason I can't push it up to GitHub. So yeah, that's all that. And I guess I will just go ahead and basically everything we've talked about so far, I will just push that repo up and make it public. And, you know, you can check it out and see if this is a thing that would work for you. And even if you're managing a single certificate, you don't have to go through the process of creating a repo and all of that kind of thing. But if you just want to have your local certificate for one host, use CertBot to update via DNS and pull down the certificate and restart the service automatically so you never have to worry about it expiring, this might be something you can do, like for your Wavelog instance or something like that. So I think I've covered all the bases. So
yeah, just in that Git repo, just make sure if it's ever had any sensitive stuff in it, you pruned the history out of it before you publish it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the nice thing about the way the repo is set up is, yeah, I'm not going to publish like my keys and stuff, obviously, but the structure is the important thing. And since it's literally just a copy of /etc let's encrypt, then I mean, I can just put the base in there. And then, of course, you can just download all of these things into the repo because the repo contains the scripts that I've written as well. So you can just copy the scripts into, you know, user local bin or whatever and, you know, customize to your needs and everything should work. And I guess I'll also include like my versions of the cron files. So you can also update those to taste as well. But you'll have certainly a stub version that should be really easy to modify and get your management going.
Yeah, cool. That'll be real interesting to look at.
It might not be that interesting because it's probably only about 100 lines of code total. So,
well, you know, still for, you know, stuff, people that want to get started on doing something like that in their own little home lab or something like that, that would be very useful.
Yeah. For somebody who you know, has subscribed or reads Reddit's r/home lab, this is definitely right up your alley, I would guess. But I think it could be, brought down to the use case of a single user with a single site too, just to maintain it and save yourself the hassle of managing your certificates and certainly the cost of having certificates that you would otherwise have to manage some other way. So hopefully this is of use to someone. And again, the links to the repo and what we've talked about here will be in the show notes. And if you have any comments or feedback, I'd love to hear them. But if there's no further commentary, I think we're done with this topic for tonight.
Yay. No, good topic. It's a good topic.
It's like I said, it's of extreme interest to me. And if this actually works the way I hope it will, it's going to lighten my load considerably because I'm literally going to use this as work too. If I think I have a lot of certificates to manage, work is tenfold what I deal with. And if I can do it this very same way, then that will be great for me. So
awesome.
All right. Well, that brings us down to the end of the topic for tonight. So there's not much left to discuss, but we do have a comment, and I'm going to let, since I've been doing all the talking tonight, I'm going to let Bill read the comment.
Alrighty. This is a comment on episode 597 from Mike, KG4VDK. He says, "Hey crew, congrats on your 600th episode. I am very thankful you took the time out to try Arc OS and talk about it in depth in episode 597. While listening to the episode, I won't lie, I was trying to telepathically and retroactively send an RTFM hint to help get over some of the hurdles that seemed to pop up. Smiley face. Since Bill mentioned it a few times in episode 597 and again in 598, I'd like to address the topic of icons. ArcOS is designed to be a tool used by different types of operators. Some of those operators may be brand new to amateur radio, Linux, or both. The simplified icon set for amateur radio software serves two purposes. First, the icons present a more coherent visual experience. Even with a family of applications like FL Digi, AMP, and Message, or the Vera modems, many of the factory icons are less than helpful in identifying the represented application. Beyond that issue, some of the included applications just don't have icons. Examples are RDOPT, Paracon, and PAT. When trying to decide how to handle these two scenarios, I chose simplicity and legibility. If a user finds the supply dock icons offensive, they can easily change them to something that suits their taste user module. Okay, that didn't make sense. I'll attach a few screenshots to that to show the differences, as well as a user module that sets the icons to factory. README included in the archive. Feel free to reach out with any other feedback that you may have, especially if you stick with it for a while. 73 KG4 VDK Mike. Yeah, so cool. RTFM. I never read manuals. Shouldn't need a manual, right?
Well, I remember that at the end of that episode, I did mention the manual quite a bit, actually, and the fact that some of these things were addressed in the fine manual that comes with it. And he also showed, I don't remember if he pointed to something or linked to something, but he showed different versions of ArcOS with the actual default icons. You can use what he calls user modules that where you can set things like that. So they persist across, you know, boots, and you can have the default icons if you like. And I do believe that's in the manual somewhere. So and if it wasn't immediately obvious, KG4BDK Mike is the author of ArcOS. So thanks Mike for the feedback. I don't find ArcOS useful for my use case, but other people might. So I do hope you get some uptake from people who listen to the program. I know you have quite a few downloads, and I know you'll be developing it further as time goes on. So thanks for the feedback, and thanks for listening anyway, and thanks for ArcOS for the people who find it useful.
Yeah, it is quite comprehensive. So yeah.
Yeah, I'll have to touch on in a future episode WinLink again, because I have two things going on with WinLink. The first is, I know we did a deep dive into WinLink in the past using PAT, and I think I way, way overcomplicated how to use PAT for doing WinLink, and I'd like to sort of readdress it as a simplified way to actually do HF, you know, email using PAT. And the other thing is, I've been vibe coding a PAT or a WinLink client for Linux in Python that simplifies it even further. It just has everything built into it, so that should be interesting. Nice.
Yeah,
it's not working. So it is working to a certain extent. I can connect to WinLink via Telnet. Still have to implement the radio part of it, but it's actually already got Hamloop support. You can connect to radios. You can see frequencies. Blah blah blah. So it's not far off, and everything is handled from one UI with a couple of tabs. You don't have to have an HTTP server running. You don't have to. You don't have to manage RDOP individually. You don't have to manage Direwolf individually. It's all handled in the application, writing the config files and everything. They're all generated on the fly. So Hopefully that will come to fruition. Unfortunately, I'm out of tokens right now.
Again? Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Well, I've been doing a lot of projects, so mostly for myself, but that one I would like to put out there if I can get it to work. So
yeah, just got to pace yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. And I noticed
Oh, I was going to say, I've even seen that with Claude where it's like, I've run out of time or something like that. And it's like, your timer resets and, you know, at 2 p.m. or something like that. So even the other paid accounts are similar in how that works. Although I think, with Warp Dev, it's a little bit more, like it hit the brakes until next month.
Yeah, I might actually switch over to Claude Code and try and throw that at the repo, because as I was getting down to it, it was trying to implement the protocol, which I can't remember what it's called, like B2F, I think, is the protocol for sending and receiving messages with Winlink. And Warp was starting to get a little stupid. I was having to hand feed it like manuals and stuff in order to get it, and it's still having a hard time properly implementing the protocol. So I might let Claude Code have a crack at it, see if it's any smarter about it. But
yeah, I was just messing with Claude Code on not 1mm to see if I can work around that issue on the Core 2 Duo processor, because I got a VM on my machine that emulates that processor, so I can see the exact error that people are running into, like Dan, KB6NU. So I was like, well, let me see if I can play around with this for a little while. So I'm making some headway, and we'll see how that goes too, as sort of a distraction for the many side projects that I have going on right now.
Yeah, I don't need another thing to work on right now, but that's be interesting, because I do believe I still have one or two Core 2 Duos around here that I could try it on. So all right, anyway, that's that. So let's get to the subscriber supporters and live participants. We have a few here. No new subscribers or Patreons. We have one free Patreon. T was all it said. So
nice.
It's not a typo, it's just T. Nobody on X, on Discord, N3VMM, and our Neef, NEIF, Raven Hollow, Wrench, Phil, N2EDX, Doug, KC5VKG, Bob, K9MDP, and actually there was one that came in after this, and let me get it here, John, KB1EJQ. Let me see if I can type that correctly, John, KB1EJQ. All right, thanks for joining us over there on Discord. Nobody on Instagram. On Mastodon, we had at WC3B, at Rico de Hond, at 0_burn, with a 3 for the E, and at Jeremy OKC. I'm going to assume that means Jeremy's in OKC. Nobody in Blue Sky, no merchandise sales. I did get all of our USB sticks printed. Yay! And I got those mailed out, so we now have lots of USB sticks to bring to him.
Cool.
And the print is actually big enough you can read it on these. So
nice.
Nobody joined us over on the mailing list, and nobody joined us for the live chat tonight. So everybody's off doing fun things or something.
Well, you know, sweepstakes is still going. Well, it just finished up. So anybody doing November sweepstakes, they just finished up, I think, about 2 minutes ago.
Ah, very good. Well, anyway, hope you had a good time running sweeps, if that's what you were doing. And for everybody else, we hope you enjoy this episode when it comes out. And with that, we'll be back with you in a week for a short topics episode. So I hope you join us then. And in the meantime, have a great week. And we'll let you go ahead and get back to what you were doing before you started listening to episode number 601 of Linux in the Ham Shack. And we're going to get on out of here. For the on assignment, Cheryl, W5MOO. I'm Russ, K5TUX.
And I'm Bill, NE4RD73.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Linux in the Ham Shack. LHS is a community-sponsored podcast. Live recordings are Sunday nights at 8 o'clock Central Time. Our homepage can be found at lhspodcast.info. You can support the podcast via Patreon at patreon.com/LHS podcast. We're also on Discord, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Mastodon. Contact us via email at info@lhspodcast.info or via voicemail at 1-909-547-7469. That's 1-909-LHS-SHOW. We also have merch. So until next we meet, remember to always heed your hedonism.